Thank you for being with us today. It seems like there's always a lot going on any given Sunday, and today I kind of feel that way. A lot of things coming at me at different things, and I'm glad you're here to hear God's Word and to worship together, and I'm grateful for each one of you and thankful for the privilege to be your pastor and your kindness to us. You're just always so kind and generous to us, and I'm very grateful for that. We're going to continue our study today in the book of Samuel, the life of King Saul. Last Sunday morning, I preached the first half of a message, and I'm going to preach the second half today about what happened to King Saul. We know that he started well. King Saul, if you look at his life and the events in his life, number one, he was chosen as the first king of Israel, and he stood ahead taller than anyone else, and he just seemed to be the right person for the job, the perfect person for the job. And our study of Saul has shown that he started very well in the beginning. Saul was listening to God. And he seemed to be responding to how God led him. He knew that he was dependent on God. And so God had told Saul through the prophet Samuel, if you listen to me and if you follow what I give you, then you will be a good king over Israel. And I will bless you and I will protect the people. I will protect your kingdom. And Saul knew that there were many enemies around Israel. And he knew that he could not keep Israel safe himself, and he knew that he needed God, and especially in the beginning, he showed an attitude that he was dependent on God. But also, we saw last week as we moved into another time period in his life that Saul had begun to make decisions that showed that he was no longer trusting in God, and that he had decided that he was able to make his own decisions. And Saul began to develop what I called last week a heart of rebellion against God. And so today we're going to go to the second half of that story. And for Saul, it kind of started out with what we may seem, and we looked at last week's story to be a minor area of disobedience. But what Saul was saying was, God, I'm going to decide for myself what to do. I am going to have my own way. And really the root core of sin is saying, I want to have my own way in my heart. I want to be in charge. I want to be the one to make the decision. And I don't want God or anyone else to tell me what to do. And so Saul did have his way. And so he was confronted by the prophet Samuel. Samuel knew what Saul had done. God had told Samuel that. And so Samuel, by this time, who is an old man, an old prophet, he comes and he confronts Saul. And last week we looked at, well, what did Saul do about it? Samuel said to Saul, Saul, what have you done? A simple question. But Saul knew that Samuel understood Saul's heart. And Samuel said, what have you done? Last week, we talked about how at that point in Saul's life, he could have made a decision to back up from what he had done, to acknowledge the authority of God, and his life could have turned out different than he did. But in fact, what he did was he made excuses. He started giving reasons why it was okay for him not to do what God told him to do. And so when confronted by Samuel, he began to give reasons and excuses, and he never admitted he was wrong. Instead of humbling himself, Saul became hard of heart. He became stubborn. He held on to what he had done and refused to let it go. Instead of being corrected by God's Spirit, Saul decided that he would make his own choices and his own decisions. And he never admitted he was wrong. And from that day on, really from chapter 13 on, Saul just continues to take steps away from God, away from listening to God. And every step Saul took just took him closer and closer to a precipice, to a point from which he could never come back. The truth is, Saul continued to walk away from God, and he finally got to the point that he was unable to find God's Spirit again. He was unable to connect again to what God wanted to say to him in his life. That's a scary part of the story. Saul missed a great opportunity to change. Saul missed the great opportunity to just kind of hold where he was and say, God, I know I'm not where I need to be. I know that I've gone beyond the warnings. I've gone beyond the red flags. I've been riding this fence. I've been right on this line, and your Spirit has been pulling me back, and your Spirit has warned me, and your Spirit has said, Saul, you need to change. And Saul ignored the voice. He ignored the conscience that God gave him, and so his life took on a tragic downward spiral. I can't cover, of course, all the stories about Saul. So last week and this week, I just want to cover these stories that give us a picture of this part of Saul's life. Last week, we saw the heart of Saul as he hardened his heart and he fell further from God's Spirit. The second story is in 1 Samuel chapter 15, and I'm going to read that this morning. Chapter 15, verses 1 through 23, there is so much in this story, and I'm not about to try to cover everything, but there's some things in this story that I think really help us to understand what happened to Saul, and a warning about what happens when we decide that we're in charge. Chapter 15, verse 1 said, Samuel said to Saul, I am the one the Lord sent to anoint you king over His people Israel. So listen now to the message of the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel when they waylaid them as they came up from Egypt. Now go, attack the Amalekites and totally destroy everything that belongs to them. Do not spare them. Put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys. So Saul summoned the men and mustered them at Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men from Judah. Saul went to the city of Amalek and set an ambush in the ravine. Then he said to the Kenites, go away, leave the Amalekites so that I will not destroy you along with them, for you showed kindness to all the Israelites when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites moved away from the Amalekites. Then Saul attacked the Amalekites all the way from Havilah to Shur to the east of Egypt. He took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, and all his people he totally destroyed with a sword. But Saul and the army spared Agag and the best of the sheep and the cattle and the fat calves and the lambs, everything that was good. These they were unwilling to destroy completely. But everything that had despised, they despised and were weak, they totally destroyed. Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel, I am grieved that I have made Saul king because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions. Samuel was troubled and he cried out to the Lord all that night. Early in the morning, Samuel got up and went to meet Saul, but he was told Saul has gone to Carmel. There he has set up a monument in his own honor and has turned and gone on down to Gilgal. When Samuel reached him, Saul said, the Lord bless you. I have carried out the Lord's instructions. But Samuel said, what then is the bleating of the sheep in my ears? What is the lowing of the cattle that I hear? Saul answered, the soldiers brought them from the Amalekites. They spared the best of the sheep and the cattle to sacrifice to the Lord your God, but we totally destroyed the rest. Stop, Samuel said to Samuel. Let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night. Tell me, Saul replied. Samuel said, although you were once small in your own eyes, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel, and He sent you on a mission, saying, go and completely destroy these wicked people, the Amalekites. Make war on them until you have wiped them out. Why do you not obey the Lord? Why did you pounce on the plunder and do evil in the eyes of the Lord? But I did obey the Lord, Saul said. I went on the mission the Lord assigned me. I completely destroyed the Amalekites and brought back Agag, their king. The soldiers took sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best of what was devoted to God, in order to sacrifice them to the Lord your God at Gilgal. But Samuel replied, does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the voice of the Lord? To obey is better than to sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance like the evil of idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, He has rejected you as king. I know this is a long story. I kind of read the whole story because there's so many things in this story that are telling and to me interesting as it raises the character of Saul and helps us to understand where he was at. There are a lot of questions about this story. None more significant to me then why God said to put to death every single Amalekite. Maybe if you read this story, maybe you've read it before, it's been a long time since you read it, you may think with me, you may have a question in your heart, why did God want the Amalekites to be destroyed? I mean, He said every person, every man, every woman, every child. His instructions to Saul were very specific. I will punish the Amalekites. And he told Saul that he was to go into their city and he was to destroy them completely. The men, the women, the children, the sheep, the cattle, everything. Why would God say that? What does that say to us about who God is? I certainly have wrestled with that question. I do know in this story that the Amalekites were known as a particularly brutal, cruel, heartless, whatever word you want to put in there, people. And they were wreaking havoc on everyone around them. I kind of picture the Amalekites, in our words today, our terms today, maybe what we think and we have seen and has been demonstrated in ISIS. They were a people that were known for their brutality. Later on, and I didn't read that part of the story, they were known as using the sword and cutting down pregnant women. That's just one example, and there probably were many others of the cruelty and the barbarity of the Amalekites. But God said, their evil has reached the point, their cruelty has reached the point that I've had enough, and I'm going to bring judgment on the Amalekites. And He said, Saul, your job is to go and to destroy the Amalekites. For sure, we don't know the full context of why, and why especially God wanted them wiped out. But we do know that they were a people that were particularly brutal, and they had become a terrible stench on the people in Israel and around Israel. God was very specific of what He wanted Saul to do. This is what the Lord Almighty says, I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel, and then now go and attack the Amalekites and totally destroy them. So we know that God's instructions were very specific, but we also know that Saul deliberately disobeyed what God told him to do. And worse than that, not just that Saul disobeyed, but the heart of Saul when he disobeyed God. What he really wanted to do was keep the spoils for himself. It's not that Saul was worried about killing the Amalekites or doing what God told him to do as far as wiping out the Amalekites. What Saul wanted, what Saul had in his heart, is Saul had wanted to be a hero, and Saul wanted to be seen as this great king who made the decisions and the choices that he wanted to. And so he spared the king's life, and he brought the king back kind of the spoils of war to humiliate the king and kind of to hold himself up on a pedestal, how powerful Saul was that he was able to do this. He spared the king's life, not because he cared about his life or he cared about putting this man to death. He spared the king's life because he wanted to demonstrate his power. You notice in verse 9, what did Saul keep of all the stuff that the Amalekites had? It says that Saul and his army kept the very best. But Saul and the army spared Agag and the best of the sheep and the cattle and the fat calves and the lambs, everything that was good. You see, Saul kept everything that he wanted for himself and for his people. He deliberately disobeyed God, but what he kept, what he did was said, God, I'm going to do partially what you tell me to, but I also am going to make the decision and keep these other things. It wasn't because he was concerned for the people, but Saul had a selfish spirit. You see it especially when you look at a couple other things in the story. You look into Saul's heart and you could see what he was thinking and feeling. In verse 12 it says, early in the morning Samuel got up and went to meet Saul, but he was told, Saul has gone to Carmel. There he has set up a monument in his own honor. So what does Saul do? Saul has this victory. He disobeys God and he says, I'm going to do it the way I want to. He keeps the king and he keeps all the good things, and then he goes and he builds a monument to himself, showing again the heart of Saul and the pride that was building inside of him. And so how does God react to this man, the king, who has deliberately disobeyed him? Well, God says, I am grieved that I made Saul king. I'm thinking of all the places that I've heard in the Bible that God was grieved. He was grieved in Noah's day that he created man. I'm thinking a comparison to that. That's the depth of the sadness in God's heart because of Saul's heart. Again, God knew his heart. He knew the rebellion that was going on inside of Saul. And he said, I am grieved that I've made Saul king. And Samuel, the prophet, his reaction when he hears the news, it says also that he was troubled in his spirit. And he cries out to the Lord all that night. So Samuel hears what Saul has done, and he cries out to the Lord all night. So that's what God says. That's what Samuel does. Now we look at what happens to Saul. Well, God sends Samuel to Saul to confront him. And so Samuel does that. What are you doing, Saul? What have you done? And so what does Saul do? Once again, as he did in chapter 13, he started to make excuses. He started to give reasons why it was okay for him not to do what God told him to do. Some of his reasons are just blatantly lies about his heart and his attitude, and he blames other people for it, and he gives these reasons why he didn't choose to do what God told him to do. He makes excuses and he lies. Look at verse 13 if you have it open. The first thing that verse 13 says, when Samuel reached him, Saul said, this is the first thing Saul says, the Lord bless you. You know, can you just imagine the kind of the dripping, what would you call that, the pretense of the words, the sugary words that Saul had when he was confronted with what he had done? Oh, the Lord bless you. You know, sometimes we can use nice words to try to cover up things that are very ugly. And this is what Saul had done. The Lord bless you, Samuel. Like, you know what, Samuel, we're just this big happy family, and you know, I'm God's servant, I'm God's king, and I'm doing everything I'm supposed to. And how are you, buddy? You know, and you know, you can just kind of see, I just imagine Samuel's face getting redder and redder. And then what he says next. He says, the Lord bless you. And then the next thing, I have carried out the Lord's instructions. And so here's Saul. Oh, bless you, Samuel. I'm so glad you're here. It's so good to see you and all that. And then he says, Samuel, I've done everything the Lord told me to do. You know, as if God doesn't know. As if God doesn't know what Saul has in his heart. You know, when people begin to make excuses, then they stop realizing that God already knows everything that's right and wrong and true in their lives. And there's all kinds of excuses and reasons and rationalizations that we can come up with why we don't have to do what we know God tells us to do. And for Saul, he just begins to it's like he becomes so out of balance. Everything is now an excuse. This is why I did it. This is what I was thinking. And everything he says just is an obvious lie from what's in his heart and what he knows is right. I have carried out the Lord's instructions. And Samuel says, well, if you've carried out the Lord's instructions, Saul, why am I hearing the bleating of sheep in the background? You know, Samuel has made this journey to where Saul is. Saul, I can just see Samuel coming on the scene, and there's Saul standing out there by the big monument, whatever it was, an idol, I don't know what it was, this big monument to how great Saul was, and you can just see Samuel, see his face getting redder, and thinking about what Saul has done and his attitude, and the first thing he hears is, oh, blessing, may the Lord bless you, Samuel, and then I've carried out the Lord's instructions, and right behind that big monument are the animals who are bleeding. And Samuel knows where they're from. Saul knows where they're from. Samuel says, if that's true, why do I hear the bleeding? Why do I hear the bleeding of the sheep in my ears? And Saul is now caught red-handed. You think at this point Saul might say, Samuel, I've done wrong. But once again, Saul has an opportunity to back up. Saul has an opportunity to to come clean, but he makes another excuse. You see this pattern that Saul is living in. One excuse leads to another. One lie leads to another. You might say a kind of a half-truth at first. At first it's a half-truth, and there is some truth in it. You know, but then the next time that doesn't cover it, and so you have to lie a little more. Or you have to stretch the truth a little bit more. You have to make up something in order to cover the last lie. And that's where Saul's life goes. Every time he's confronted with what he does, he makes an excuse why it's okay. Saul becomes, if you're looking away to look at King Saul, he becomes an excuse maker. And every excuse he makes takes him further and further away from the heart of God. He just continues day after day and story after story. He's fallen to one excuse after another. One lie must be added to protect the other lie. And he tries to be self-righteous. Well, this is the reason why. In fact, there's really three rounds of excuses in this story alone. And to finally, we come to verse 16, and we have what I think is maybe the most important word in the story that God says to Saul. He says in verse 16, Samuel said to Saul, "Stop! Stop, Saul! Stop making excuses! Stop telling me why it's okay for you to disobey God! Stop trying to rationalize in your mind, well, I really don't have to do what I know God puts in my conscience to do, and it's okay if..." Stop! Stop blaming the soldiers of Israel for getting the sheep and the cattle. Stop saying that you are going to sacrifice them to the Lord. Stop giving reasons why it's okay to walk away from the conscience and the commands of God. Stop. That's a big word. That's an important word. I think as I read and try to absorb this story, that word is what really stands out to me. Stop. Maybe you've read this story many times in your life. Maybe this is the first time you've ever heard this story, but if you have things in your life that you know you're walking a fine line, you're kind of sitting on the fence of doing what's right, you know you're not following the conscience that God gives you and the Spirit speaks to you about, let me offer you one word from the Bible today. Stop. God knows where you're at. He knows where you cut the corners. He knows where you make the excuses. He knows where your attitude is not right. He knows where you have, you're holding or harboring something in your heart that is not holy. He knows that. Stop making reasons why you think it's okay. And do what Saul could have done, but he never did. What Saul could have done at this point was said, "I'm wrong. I've sinned against God." He said it later on, but from the whole context, it was obvious he never meant it. But at this point, he had an opportunity, and Saul could have stepped back and said, "Samuel, I'm wrong. I've done wrong." But instead, he makes excuses. Samuel says, "Stop." And then Samuel goes on in the next verse. He says, "Samuel said, 'You were once small in your own eyes.'" Boy, that's a telling phrase. From Samuel to Saul, the words of the Lord, "You were once small in your own eyes." That really captures a lot. Captures a lot of the struggle in the human heart of who's in charge. You know, we can kind of have the attitude in our heart that we're the ones that are going to make the decision. We're the ones that are going to be in charge. We're the ones that are going to have our way. And we get bigger and bigger in our own eyes, and God gets smaller and smaller in His authority. That's what happened to Saul. Somehow he just got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. "You were once small in your own eyes," a short statement, but full of truth. Instead of Saul stepping back and saying, God, I'm wrong. Instead, he hardened his heart. He had pride in his heart, and when he held on to that pride, it destroyed him. When he held on to the pride, it destroyed him because it just got worse. I know this is an ugly story for a number of reasons. But there's more stories in Samuel that are as ugly or uglier. Because Saul would not humble himself and say, God, I'm sorry. If he would have said, God, I'm sorry, I think he could have found the same thing that another man who did a terrible thing did. You remember David, the second king of Israel? How he murdered one, premeditatedly murdered a husband so that he could have his wife in adultery. I mean, just think of that. How terrible. And all the things that David did that was terrible. The difference between David and Saul is not the depth of their sin. I mean, I think of what Saul did and I think, well, that don't sound so bad to me. I mean, relatively speaking. You know, that's part of the problem is we kind of relatively speaking God's law sometimes. But the difference between Saul and David was David, when he was confronted by the prophet of God and the word of the Lord, David stepped back and said, I have sinned. And when Saul was confronted by the prophet and the word of the Lord, he said, well, I had a good reason for it. So what has happened to Saul? His life, a long life. I mean, he's going to be king for another 27 years. But there ain't a good day for Saul coming. That every day is going to be filled with pain because he refused to humble himself in his heart before God. Whereas what happens to David? David comes clean. He confesses his sin. He means it in his heart. He says, God, I'm sorry. And God cleansed him from sin, a man after God's own heart. What an amazing story. What an amazing contrast between David and Saul. Saul's pride destroyed his life because when he had an opportunity and the voice of the Lord said, stop, he didn't do it. He didn't stop. I remember when I was in high school, I was 15 or 16 years old, somewhere around there. I don't remember exactly, but I remember a day in my life when I was confronted with a stop in my life. I remember a day that God used someone to say in my life, not that word, but something that meant the same thing, Wayne, stop. And stop might be the most important word that you can listen to in your life, in your heart, when you're outside of God's plan. God can help you if you stop. God can help you if you have an attitude that says, God, I'm out. I'm outside of what you want for me. If you're willing to stop, God can take your life and change it and make something good like he did King David. Stop. Would you stand with me as we pray?